This podcast was originally live streamed on the Non Sequitur Show on YouTube. New episodes air weekdays, Monday through Friday, at 8 p.m. Eastern at youtube.com/nonsequiturshow. Make sure you never miss a live stream by visiting www.nonsecshow.com/schedule. For the latest news, polls and updates throughout the day, follow us on Twitter at nonsecshow or facebook.com/nonsecshow. That's NONSEQ show. If you'd like to get exclusive content, bi-weekly private hangouts with Kyle and Steve, backstage access to chat with guests after shows hosted on your channel and much more, become a Patreon saint of Non Sequitur. It ensures we continue to improve our show and brings you into the process at the same time. Visit patreon.com/nonsequitur today while the limited spots are still available.
The following podcast is intended for those who believe bold ideas are righteous, unique perspectives are gospel, and strong opinions are sacred. This is Non Sequitur. Never follow. And now, here are your hosts, Kyle Curtis and Steve McRae.
Okay, so we are live, and first I'm going to I'll introduce you, and then I'll let you introduce yourself. So we had last week on Monday, we had the German atheist, and I got a lot of comments from you that it can't be better than we have, even better, of the godless community. One half of the Non Sequitur show is here in person to tell us about his spiritual experiences. And you may know him as Steve McRae. He calls himself an agnostic. Is that still correct, Steve?
Yeah, it's still correct.
Okay. Don't let that fool you if you are an atheist. He is one of your big guns in the fight against religion. And he's one half of the Non Sequitur show. And let's have him introduce himself right now.
Well, hey, first of all, Craig, good to see you again. It's been a while. You were on the Non Sequitur show, I believe. I don't remember the topic. You had a debate with Thomas, Holy Kool-Aid. But was it religion needed or is good?
That was one. I've been on a few times.
The last time, though, I think it was Thomas, though. But anyways, good seeing you again, because like I said, it's been a while. I'm not quite sure what the goddess community is. Is that a name that you've given something?
Well, because I just titled you Leading Light of the Godless Community.
Okay.
Because I didn't want to say Leading Light of Atheism, because I know you don't necessarily call yourself an atheist. So we'll get into that in a bit. But before we start, there's a couple things about you I don't know. Start from the beginning. Like, how did you, in terms of your relationship to non-belief?
I kind of tell you how I got into belief to begin with.
Go ahead.
Because
wherever you want to start.
Yeah, I never grew up religious. My mom was Jewish. My dad was Protestant. We've had, various other denominations in my family. My brother was kind of Jehovah's Witness. Most of them are Protestant or Baptist or Methodist. Kind of across the board. But we never really were a religious family by any stretch of the imagination. And I would go to a couple, Christian things here and there, but never really was interested. Matter of fact, every time they would kind of pray or anything like that, I just took kind of a leave of absence at that point, and excuse myself from the room. I just never had a desire to get into religion. But when I was about 17 or so, I was at my ex-girlfriend's house, and the two missionaries there were going to give her mom a blessing. And the way they do is they anoint the person's head with oil, and they give a little prayer and stuff like that. And they asked, would you mind – praying with us and being part of that little blessing.
These are Christian missionaries?
They were Mormon missionaries. They were Mormon missionaries.
Okay.
So, yeah. And I remember distinctly, I was sitting on the couch, and they said her name, and as soon as they said her name, like, my whole body was just, like, lit up like a Christmas tree. It felt like it was just, wasn't a painful burning sensation, but it was just very, very lit up. As a matter of fact, I remember distinctly that I couldn't see, like, my eyes closed, but it was like if somebody put a very bright light up to your eyes, and you know how you can see the redness of your interior of the lids of your eyes. That's what I saw. Uh-huh. I could literally see like somebody was putting a bright light to my eyes. And then they said amen, and that it just went away. And I also felt like I was like lifted up, like literally, like I was kind of moved up from my, off the couch. And I said, whoa. And they looked at me like kind of weird, and I didn't really say much. But that later on, I asked them, what the heck was that? And they were talking about the Holy Ghost and all that. Well, I decided to take the missionary lessons, and I actually got baptized Mormon. On that predicated on that distinct feeling.
Wait, slow down. You got baptized as a Mormon. I had no idea 17. About any of this. Wow. Okay. All right, keep going.
And wow. Yeah, and I wasn't really active that much.
Before you go on, that experience was convincing to you at the time, correct?
Yes.
That's why you joined up with the squad?
Yeah, that was the only thing. Yeah, because that was the only
thing. The experience itself compelling enough to impress anybody, have any ulterior reasons for joining?
Well, I didn't have an explanation at the time, right? I mean, I went by with their explanation, right? Because it seemed like the logical thing, or at least at the time, it was the rational thing.
Okay, so go ahead with this.
So, that was my only, spiritual experience that I've ever had where I said, okay, well, this is something that I'm actually feeling. That's a tangible thing. So let me run with it. And then at about 2008, the church, and again, I wasn't really active. I went to the military, joined the Navy, as you know, and became a nuclear propulsion supervisor for the Navy. And throughout that time, just put it to the side. I mean, I never forgot the feeling, but it just – the whole aspect of the church just didn't really appeal to me that much, I guess, anymore. Matter of fact, I got to tell you, I mean, I never really had a connection to, like, the Book of Mormon. I read it 3 times. Never thought it was that great. Never had this relationship with Jesus. Never had this relationship with God. Just that feeling that I had. And in 2008, when the church started to get involved in politics by – funding these Prop 8, which was the marriage proposal in California, I was very much against it. Then I read more about it and found out they were giving money to the Evergreen Project, which was a project that believed in reparative therapy or conversion therapy, which is basically making somebody who was gay trying to get them to be heterosexual, either by electroshock therapy or by prayer, may have been some drugs, I don't know. But it doesn't work. It's a pseudoscience.
And who exactly? Prop 8 was I vaguely remember that. That was the gay
initiative. Yeah, it was a California initiative on the ballot, right?
Right, and it was and so the church that you were involved in was
the Mormon Church gave a lot of money to go against Proposition 8.
Right, and that you found out about that, and that you didn't like that.
Well, actually, I think it was the other way around. They were. I'm trying to remember the actual proposition. I don't remember the proposition.
Right. It doesn't yeah. They were against gay marriage. You are pro gay marriage.
Absolutely.
So you're kind of uneasy about them taking their stance.
Yeah, and I don't believe that church should be involved. I believe in secular society. I don't believe a church should actually get involved in political matters, right? Especially when they're along the lines of something dealing of that nature, and especially to the point where they're funding it, right? I mean, I believe in a very strong separation of church and state.
Right. Okay. But keep going. We're still in the story stage.
Okay. So, I basically at that point, I really had a major disconnect with the church at that point. And then, I never really formulated my theological positions. When I first got on the YouTube scene, I had my channel 5 years. I started my channel in March of 2013, so it's been over 5 years.
Was it as it formed now, where it was like atheists coming on in debates, or was it something different when you started?
No. Actually, by the way, Sygart notices that you do have some static from your mic that I pointed out earlier. So,
is it bad? Ask him if it's bad enough that I should switch.
Well, he can probably hear you. He's in the chat. Hey, Cy. Hey, buddy. I like Slagard. Great guy. One of my favorite theists. So
I thought I was just – wait a minute. What do you mean? One of.
They're not exclusive. He's my favorite theist with a PhD in biochemistry. How about that?
No, actually, he's one of your favorite theists with the – all right.
He is one of them, because I actually really like Dr. Fuzz Rana too, so –
I don't know who that is.
Dr. Fuzrada, he is with Reasons to Believe. He works very closely with Dr. Hugh Ross.
Oh, okay.
And both of them are friends of mine. Matter of fact, Dr. Fuzrada, three times now, he's actually taken one of the questions I've either posed to him or somewhere on my Facebook, he's taken it and actually made it a question of the week. So I was really appreciative of that. Plus, he actually sent me one of his books called Dinosaur Blood and the Age of the Earth, and he kind of asked me to kind of look it over from a layperson's perspective. Because anybody can ask for a book review, right? But people know that I'm not an expert. They know that I'm a layperson. But most of the people don't think that I'm an idiot. So he wanted to kind of get my impression of the book from a person who is not, a biologist or biochemist. And I thought that was pretty cool. And then Dr. Ross sent me Improbable Planet for kind of the same reason. So I'm thrilled to kind of do those things as a layperson, because I think when you write a book, it really matters more what the layperson thinks. Of course, you want it to be correct, and you want it to be, you can't have a really peer review, but you want to be viewed by your peers. But if a layperson doesn't understand their book and that's what the book is kind of tailored to, then what good is it, right? And I thought Improbable Planet was very good, by the way. Right. And I thought Fuzz Book was really good. My only criticism is Fuzz Book is really small. But
okay, one thing before we go further, because I didn't get to this yet and I'll forget. What is your actual education background? Or do you have a PhD? Because always think that you
do. I don't have a degree, man.
You don't even have a degree past high school?
Nope.
Wow. Wow.
Hang on. I have 120 plus college credits, right? I mean, I have enough for a bachelor's degree. So in essence, I have the equivalent to a bachelor's degree. I have a lot of credits toward nuclear technologies, but I didn't finish my degree. There was a couple more classes I needed to take. I didn't finish those classes, so I didn't get my degree. So I'm undegreed or non-degreed. But that doesn't mean that I don't remember the information that I took, because I took a lot of college courses. I took macroeconomics. I took critical thinking. I took music theory. I took accounting. And then, of course, I took a lot of core stuff. So I took calculus and took physics. But I also had about 60 credits or so through Naval Nuclear Power School, which is about an associate's degree towards nuclear technology. Most of the people that finished their degree in nuclear engineering didn't have to take that many more courses to finish their degree in nuclear engineering, but I didn't take those courses. So, no, I don't have it really amazes when people think that I have a degree. I don't know why.
Let me just speak. Oh, you strike me and many people as very well versed in some of at least the things that you are talking about. So are you mostly self-taught? What is this, through just reading online or going to different sources, library? Where's the body of your knowledge coming from?
I was kind of the smart kid in the class, right? They call me the professor. Right. And I really happened to like astrophysics. I was sitting in college level courses when I was like 16. I was reading at a college level when I was in grade school. I scored a 99 on my ASVAB, a perfect score. So, I mean, all my life I've kind of excelled in the intellectual department. But then, you go to nuke school, and the nuke school is the top, 1% of the military, I guess, really. You have to have at least, I think, an 85 to get a nuke school. And most of the people, if you have less than a 95, you're probably going to fail out. I never really toot my own horn, but I got to tell you, it was rough. It was hard. Anybody who thinks that Naval Nuclear Power School is easy needs to try it, because it is not like college. College is a breeze compared to Naval Nuclear Power School. Matter of fact, it's designed by MIT. They take literally, five course credit courses, you take a calculus is worth five units. They take five, those types of courses, and they compress it down into one day, and you have 6 months to learn it, then you have another year and a half to actually apply it. So it's a lot of freaking work. Okay. But when I got to nuke school, I realized that, hey, these people are smart. I actually got an average score. I was basically 3.0, right? Straight down the line. Right. I think I even got a 2.95 on my final, if I remember correctly. But it's passing, right? You had to get a 2.5 or higher. People didn't. In fact, the highest grade in our class was a 3.6. So what does that tell you? So yes, it's a hard thing. But I realized that, you know what? I'm not as smart as these motherfuckers, right? I'm just not. And then when you get on YouTube, you're around people that are degreed and are intelligent. And you realize, you know what? You don't know jack shit, but you enjoy listening to them. And what I did over the last 4 years is I listened to people. And right. I gleaned so That's much right. information from it. And then I would go validate it on my own. I would go look at Google Books and go read things. If a friend of mine would tell me, hey, in philosophy, this is like this. Okay, I would read the thing 7 or 8 times before I kind of understood it. But I wanted to understand.
I definitely think Twitter opens you up. Twitter with YouTube combined especially opens you up to a whole – I mean, there's a whole avenues of exploration that I hadn't even considered before I got on Twitter. And, you know. I'm not necessarily well versed in them now, but I'm heading, you know, necessary about in terms of just whatever the stuff that we discuss, apologetics, things like that. Okay, so go ahead. Where were we with the story?
So when it comes back, me leaving the church, and going back to me having my YouTube channel, and I listen to the atheist and theist arguments and. I finally reached a position. I first said that I was an apatheistic, agnostic, theological and a cognitivist. And I eventually whittled that down.
That's what you first said you were.
Yeah, but some people never remember that back in the day.
But
then I looked more into it, and I'm not a theological and a cognitivist any longer. I mean, at the time, that position kind of makes sense to me, but as I look more at it, I realize it doesn't make sense, right? So it's one of those things that you change your position on, which I think is something that a lot of people don't do. They get fixated in some type of ideology, but they don't change it according to what they learn. And as I learn more about propositions, I learn more about what a theological and a cognitivist actually is, it's not exactly what I was thinking it was, and I realize that's not exactly my position. That's the position where propositions don't have a value that can be assigned to them. They're not truth apt. That's what a non-cognitivist would think, right? But I do think that these propositions like at least one God exists, I think you can assign a truth value to that, right? And if you do, you're called a theist.
Right.
So that's fine with me. If somebody wants to assign a truth value to that, that's a theist. If you assign a false value to me, that's an atheist. That's what it is in philosophy. In any kind of formal academic settings, when you're talking about theism or atheism, it is if you assign a truth value to that, you're a theist. If you assign a false value, you're an atheist. I don't assign either.
So you started your channel out, and you are what is it? Is an exploration, and you haven't taken a position? Is that what you're telling me? When your channel starts. And tell me when Kyle comes on board and why.
Yeah, when I first started the channel, when I first started my channel, it was all about debunking young earth creationism, right? And
that was
where I started. My very first hangout basically was debunking young earth creationism.
Okay.
And again, I knew the topic pretty well because I had dealt with them before on AOL and things of that nature, but nowhere near the knowledge level I have now. Over the years, I've really gained a lot more knowledge on how to really debunk young earth creationism, but I had a decent understanding back then. I even had an interview with it wasn't even an interview, just a one-on-one with Kent Hovind long before he came on our channels. I mean, he's been on my channel like a dozen times, on the Non Sequitur show a couple times. Rumor has it he might be coming back, people. Maybe, don't put that out there yet. That's a secret, but we're working on something. We're making magic happen, if anybody cares.
Wait, say this all again. Paul from Paulogia?
No. Kent Hovind.
Okay.
We're gonna see I don't know. We're gonna see if he's desperate enough to try to come back on or something. We'll give it a shot, okay. Right? But long story short. Come in.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah. No, I don't know if he's coming back yet. Nothing's confirmed. So this is our secret. The four people watching this, secret time. So, hey, Bad Tempered Badger, by the way, in the live chat. I pay attention to the live chat when I do this. I know a lot of people don't like to. I like
it. I can't. I try to, but I get too – befuddles me too much. It gets too many irons in the fire. I'm very like, if I do too many things, I start to just spaz out and get confused. So I try to, but I can't. But Badger, I like. Badger's a really good guy, actually. What's up, Badger? Is he there? Did you not hear me? Can you not hear me?
What'd you say about Badger? I thought you were talking to Badger.
No, Badger in the chat group. I like Badger.
Oh, yeah.
Badger's a good guy.
And so, anyways, like I said, you know, I'd listen to these arguments, and I wasn't convinced by any of them, right? And I thought back to when I had my spiritual experience, and so I was always hanging on to some kind of agnosticism because, you know, I tried to ground myself with that. Hey, I felt something. I don't know what it is, but I felt something. But then I realized, well, people feel something all the time. I mean, everybody seems to have these weird experiences. But they all go to different directions. They all go to denominations. If you ask a fundamental evangelist Christian, they'll be like, well, that couldn't have been the Holy Ghost because you were with Mormons, right? Because they don't even think Mormons are Christians. And then you ask somebody who's a little more open-minded, they'll be like, you know what? The Holy Ghost can open work in any kind of situation. And then you have some that say, well, that's not even what the feeling is. There's no consensus, right? And I like consensus when it's dealing with empirical type things. And so I have to chalk it up to different something else. I don't know. I still don't have a full explanation for it. But not having explanation does not mean that it had to be the Holy Ghost, because I have no way to relate it to that. Matter of fact, my position was, if God wanted me to have that experience and to be the Holy Ghost, he should have made it in a way that I couldn't even doubt it, right? I mean, it couldn't even second guess it, because I had somebody else had to tell me what it was, right? I didn't discover it on my own. And that, I think, is a problem. When you don't discover an attribute of something on its own, like what the Holy Ghost, whatever property would have, and you're relying on somebody else to tell you what it is, then you don't really have that discovery element, right? I mean, like all the properties of God, nobody's ever discovered a property of a God. It's all been delivered to us by other people, right? I mean, think about this. Everything we know about a deity, the deity you believe in, has been told to you by humans. They've assigned characteristics that they wanted that deity to have. And that's why, you know, so many people have written for the Bible, but that's why you find so many different types of versions of what the God is. God's hateful, God's loving, God's good, he's not good, he's bad, he's this. Anything you want to find, it's there, right? Because you had so many people writing. And so looking back, you know, I go, okay, what is my actual position? You know, I am kind of apathetic, and that when I mean apathetic, I don't really care so much about the existential nature of if there's a deity or not. That's not why I go to YouTube. I like the dialogue. I like the argumentation. I like the organic conversations, and I like people having good arguments, whether they're on one side or the other. And I am pretty fair. Most people probably tell you, ones that actually bother to listen to what I have to say, I'm pretty fair in my application of being critical across the board. I don't play tribalism. I don't capitulate to any particular group because they happen to disagree with me. No, I do my own thing. And sometimes I get shit for it. It happens, right? But I'm not going to stop being that way, because that teaches me how to grow. Because over the last 4 years, 4 years ago, dude, you would have thought that I was a philosophical idiot. I was. I was the kind of person out there going, philosophy has no use. It's, you know, a bunch of guys sitting around smoking cigars, drinking single malt scotch. You know, that's it. And then I realized, after a friend of mine who has a PhD in philosophy kept kicking my ass, that maybe I should. Just 4 years ago, yeah. I've never taken a single philosophical course in my life. I took all science courses. I took biology. I took intro to astronomy kind of courses. I love the sciences, but I didn't bother with taking any philosophy courses. Everything I learned about philosophy, I've learned on my own.
But in that brief of a time, because I would have thought that you were at least a layperson in philosophy, going all the way back to your 20s, at least.
Oh no, 4 years, man.
Wow. Okay. You know what that reminds me of? I don't know if you listened to. I had a chat with Renee. Do you probably know Scott Clifton?
Yeah, right? Of course I know Scott Clifton. Yeah, theoretical bullshit.
Do you know him?
Theoretical bullshit he's known by.
So, yes. for a while, I was friends with him last year before he became, right before he won his Emmy. And then I was chatting with him a lot on Twitter. And he, now I immediately, just from my interactions with him and from watching his channel, I was convinced without asking him that he had a PhD in philosophy. He's a high school dropout.
Yeah, so no, he's totally. He has no formal education on philosophy.
It blew when he told me that. I freaked out on Twitter. I think it freaked him out because I was like, "What the fuck?"
I just want to show you that you don't need. I am a very big fan of people that go out and get an education. I mean, I am in awe when somebody says they're a PhD. My mouth hangs open, right? I am actually intimidated still to this day. And how many dozens and dozens and dozens of PhDs did I talk to? A lot, and I'm still to this day just amazed when I get a chance to talk to them, especially when, like the other day, I was talking to a doctor. Kroon, who's an astrophysicist, and we were just shooting the shit like on Horizon. There's a Horizon problem, and we're talking about cosmic inflation and all this other shit. It was just like, I'm talking to an astrophysicist about this stuff. This is great, right? Never would have happened years ago, right? It's only because of the Great Debate community and YouTube that I got lucky enough to meet people that have, you know, gone that far in their education, and I applaud that. I don't ever want to be held to that level because I didn't get to that.
Well, probably also.
What's that?
So what's going to interact with, what's going on is a bit of an organic process because you're on these debates all the time, which sharpens your mind, and then you're dealing with high-level people at least some of the time. You mentioned Ken Hovind. Okay, he's not the highest level. But then you're dealing with PhD people. So it's sharpening your intellect, and it's at least teaching you the language. And once you know the language, you know, that's half the battle. If you can talk the talk when it comes to philosophy and people know you're not just talking shit, a lot of times it starts to sound really informative it starts to sound really highbrow.
I get that. And you know, I what I do is like on a non sequitur, I kind
would
of
you say that was correct or no?
Yeah, things get highbrow pretty quickly, right? But I try to bring things down to a very normal level, like I would have understood back before, you know, I got into like reading about philosophy and stuff, or any other topic. Science too. Like I have a decent ability to listen to somebody who knows science really well and kind of parse it out to be able to explain it to the average person. That's kind of what I do.
I would say totally. Those conversations. And your live chats on the after shows, the conversation going to terror too esoteric, and while it'll spill over and can't even listen to the same one, or it just gets too theoretical. But for the most part, you guys, both of you actually, and Kyle too, do a really good job of grounding it back, bringing it back down to the, you know, to where the audience, you're not going to lose people in the audience, right?
Yeah, and that's a concern we have on Non Sequitur Show. We want to be able to diversify to a large group, right? I mean, obviously, we can't please everybody. And Kyle and I are both well aware of this, that you are never going to please your entire audience. And the reality is that if you please about 80% of them and 20% are unhappy, you know what? Such is frickin' life. That's the way it's going to work on YouTube. And that's not across the board, but I mean, a single video, one person may say, I hate that video, but I love the next one, right? So as long as they're having videos they do watch, it's gonna equal out, right? But like the videos that I like, people don't really have an affinity for. Matter of fact, Kyle's and I's favorite videos are not our top videos, believe it or not. Right?
What are your guys' favorite videos?
I gotta tell you, like I love the coin videos, like with Nick, the numismatist. I'm just fascinated by that shit. Just absolutely blown away. Yeah, oh, they're great. They're great. He talks about the coins from the Greek era. I love Dr. Misha coming in, and she talks about Czechoslovakia. I liked it when Dr. Bowen comes in, he'll talk about Assyriology. Those are the ones I really like. But, of course, the dumpster fires are the ones that get all the views.
Right.
It's the way it is.
And Ron, that type of thing.
Yeah, and I love Aaron too. Yeah, I mean, Aaron I absolutely adore. You know, and he's a great guest, fantastic guest. Those do get a lot of hits, right? But the dumpster fires are not the ones that people are going to take away something education-wise, right? Something edifying. So to me, I just happen to like the education ones. It's just personal preference, right? That's it. But we have to do a mixture of everything. right?
Right,
and
I totally agree.
Yeah, and that's just the way it is. That's what it is on non sequitur. You never know what you're going to get. One day it could be a dumpster fire, the next day it could be a highbrow conversation. But even then, like you said, it doesn't get too highbrow. When we get to that level, we kind of go to my channel because I can bring in more of a select group of people that may know the topic, and we can kind of get in more in-depth, right? And that's the ones I like because that's the ones right. I learn, you know?
Right.
And I wish more people would get more in-depth in my channel because I'm like, hey, you know what? I want to learn this stuff. Go ahead, man. Get in-depth. And if I got questions, I'll ask, which I always do.
Well, right. Well, that's why I originally, when I had Cirrus on, I said I wanted you and Cirrus to come on at one point and talk about, go in-depth into either epistemology or morality. And it's still an open invitation, so if you guys want to do that.
Yeah, the morality topic though is rough because a lot of people use these words differently, right? And even I do not have a firm grasp on the whole moral content discussion. It's rough. It's not an easy discussion, and I think it goes awry really quickly.
That's why I wanted you personally. That's why I called when I had Cirrus on the show because I thought there was a brief period where you guys were with Stephanie, and there was a period of about 40 minutes to a half an hour where I thought it actually started to get productive. I know exactly what you're talking about because you can get bogged down in even what subjective means versus objective. And
yes.
How people hear subjective can get really, really confusing. But I thought that your take on morality, and I don't know if we should go into this now, but I thought your take on morality could get very productive because I got what you were saying, and I thought we could. You mean so? It's.
Well, I appreciate that. I try to break it down where people can actually understand it. Although I get things wrong quite frequently, right? But the difference is when people of a caliber that know the material correct me, I don't pull this. Oh, I'm going to push back. I'm going to be like, well, what the hell did I got wrong? Even if I was right, at least I'm going to take pause and go, okay, what did I get wrong here? I want to think this through. Like the is-ought, I still have a hard problem with Hume's is-ought. It's a difficult concept to get. I'm still working through it, right? So that discussion I kind of backed away from because I didn't know enough about it to really dive into what the is-ought is more than it just being a hidden premise that exists in there and dealing with normative qualities and other qualities. It's a very difficult subject that I'm not going to ever get good at. So those things I steer away from. The only time I'll get into a discussion with a PhD where I really don't think they're correct, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be an area that they're not an expert in, right? And that happens more than I could probably say sometimes. But at least then when they say, you know what, that's not really my area, I'll go look it up and they'll come back, hey, you know what, on that particular issue, you were right. So it can happen, you know.
Right. Now, the thing that I was going to tell you, because you just made the first time I was on I Liked About Other, was that was the first time that I, as a theist, ever felt like I was talking to people interested in getting at the truth or having a real conversation, or they weren't, you guys were not just trying to like shut me down and like shut me out. You were taking some of the things I say to try and expand the conversation. Mm-hmm. So I was impressed the first time I was on the show, and I thought you guys were pretty much fair as far as evil atheists go. I thought you were you're not even an atheist, but...
Yeah, and I'll get into that
a little more. Some of the lesser of evils.
And I appreciate that. Look, our goal on the non-sequitur show is not to play this game of gotcha, right? We'll be very fair until somebody we think is getting to the point where we believe they're being dishonest, right? And Aaron gets to that point pretty quick. He'll like call somebody out.
Right.
Look, you're at the point where you're not even listening. You're dishonest, and he has every right to, and I think he's right. You know, at that point, what are you going to do? We do the same thing. But initially, we'll give people the benefit of the doubt, and we want to hear the conversation. If you're an honest person who honestly has a belief, then I'm all for that. Let's talk about it, right? Nobody in the last 5 years – well, I've had my channel 5 years, but I've only really been doing videos for like 2.5, but I was commenting on other videos for 5 years. But nobody's ever heard me ever bash somebody because of their actual belief, right? I've never mocked Christianity. I've never mocked somebody's fundamental religious ideological beliefs. What I mock is things like flat earth. What I mock is when people say the earth is 7,000 years old and then they give the most stupidest reasons for it contrary to science. That's the stuff I mock because that's science. They're offering that as a scientific thing. They're not offering it as a faith base. They're not saying Jesus rose from the dead. Okay, fine. That's a faith thing. Out of my area. You know, I'll let the theologians deal with that, right? But if you tell me that the earth rained for, you know, 7,000 or 7 days for 40 days, whatever it was, and all the animals that exist, all the plants that exist, and all the extant life that exists came from a ship that was floating all that time, that's no longer a religious belief to me. That is a legit attempt to try to make a scientific claim that I call bullshit on, right? Do you see the difference?
Okay, what's happening there, though? See, the difference is, and this is kind of, I guess, why there's two things I want to say before I go into this. First thing is, a lot of people will say, yes, I try to be fair, and yes, we try to have real conversations, but you guys actually kind of follow through on it, as far as I was concerned, from my experience. You can hear me, right?
Yeah, from your experience,
okay, because the last time I was doing this. The other thing, so you guys actually follow through on, is that if someone is making a claim that is not, that is more fact-based, then yeah, you gotta be able to back up the claim in terms of fact-based. Like if I were going to present this, I've even said this to the Noah's Ark Christians themselves. If you're going to say like the Earth is 6,000 years old, okay, make your case to these people and convince them the actual concrete reality. You know, all of a sudden you're in an area of conversation.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
You're perfectly legit to challenge at that point. Whatever. If I say, you know, this is America doesn't exist. I throw that out there. America isn't actually a place. Okay. Prove that with actual evidence that I can latch onto or go away. Right? Is that kind of.
Yeah, yeah. Look, if those things are scientific claims, right? If somebody says like Jesus rose from the dead, sure, somebody can say, well, that's still a science claim against the ontology of the universe, saying that, you know,
we know that the person can't.
When somebody at least says, look, we're taking it as a faith based claim that was a miracle, science has no say on it any longer, right? Again, leave that to the theologians. But when you say that, and I'm not you because I know you're not a younger creationist, but when you say that. You know, all life came from the ark. We can test that. You know, and they're not saying that's a miracle. They're not taking that as a miracle position, right? That's a huge difference, and that's why when I go after young earth creationism, I'm not going after a person's faith. I'm going after their scientific claims. Right. They're saying evolution is wrong.
The substance, if that we're basically, if you're making an outlandish, substantive, empirical claim that belies common sense and basic understanding of reality, for example, America is not a real place, it's an imaginary land, then you have to back it up with concrete reality, evidence, empirical evidence. But when one of the things that you guys understood innately, which I've had to try to explain to other atheists, when you are having a theological discussion, that's a totally different thing.
Yes.
Then you, agnostic or the non-believer, can enter into discussion as if God really exists. You don't have to believe that God exists in order to discuss his attributes or discuss theological. Well, you know, if I say God is good, a theological conversation without you having, you can just for the purpose of the conversation, you know, agree that, you know, to have the conversation as if God is real. You guys understood that. A lot of atheists won't do that. You know, they'll keep trying to beat you, quote unquote, in the conversation and kind of try to beat you over the head. So there's no point in really discussing anything. You know what I'm saying? Like, if we start talking about some of the things we talked about on your show, were like theological questions in nature. You know, is God innately good, or does, you know, you know the questions.
Yeah, no, and here's the thing, I can step into any position. If somebody wants to argue a theistic position, I can hear them out. I can step into that position too. I can argue things like argument from contingency or argument from motion or any Aquinas five-way stuff. Doesn't mean I think they're convincing arguments, right? But I also know enough to say, well, you know what? This is why they're not convincing. Explain why the argument of contingency is nothing that gets you to God. At the very most, some of the stuff can get you a deist, best case scenario, but it doesn't get you a theism. And I know that Aquinas doesn't even think that it could either. I think he was using them all as, hey, look, I got all these different things I'm going to throw at you and make a probabilistic argument that because of all these different things, there's a theist, but or a theistic type God, but I don't know for sure of that. But that seems to be what his approach was.
One of the things that I talked about on my channel, and I'm going to go into this more, is that, and I'm sure you'd agree with this, the most of your Thomas, and if Heather or maybe Sai, I don't know if Sai is on board, Stephanie might think they're all good. I don't actually think that the cosmological arguments and the quote-unquote proofs for gods, I don't think they're sound. I agree with, I'll call you an atheist, you the atheist in those. They're not actual proofs of God.
No, they're not supposed to be, though.
One I've heard.
I think it's a misnomer when people refer to them as proofs. I know I don't. They generally are. They're generally referred to as proofs, right? But they're really not. I mean, they're just
because they're not successful,
right?
Because they don't actually work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The best one I've heard of them is the argument from eternal truth, and it's kind of a variation on the Thomas Aquinas one. It's in Phaedra's Five Proofs of God. It's I think the fourth one. It's decent. Again, it's not a proof. That's the problem, is he calls the book Five Proofs of God. It's not a proof. If I can tell you the argument, you're not going to walk away from me telling you the argument going, wow, Craig just proved God is real.
That's why I don't like
the proof. You know what I mean? It means it's good somebody based on. Go ahead.
Yeah, when people call them the five proofs rather than the five ways, I just kind of take it back on that because they're not, like you said, they're not proofs. And I think if Aquinas knew what we know now, he would actually think a lot of the arguments are bad. For example, like the argument from causation, right? That seemed legit to him at the time. And it probably would have been convincing to him and other people at the time. But the argument from causation now isn't something that is unexplainable. Matter of fact, we know there are things that do not have a cause. There are effects without a cause. The law of cause and effect is not a real law. There's no such law in physics called the law of cause and effect. Okay. Matter of fact, it is a necessity in some aspects of physics and quantum mechanics that there is an effect without a cause because there's no cause to be had in order to have the effect.
Sai, is he right? Is he still there?
Yeah, I'm right on that.
He's right, Sai. He's right. Leave him alone.
He's a biochemist. What the fuck does he know about?
Sai runs circles around those jerks.
Sai's freaking brilliant, man.
Sai was kicking everyone.
I don't know if he's familiar with this particular thing. I mean, this has to do with the Copenhagen interpretation because the Copenhagen interpretation says there's no local variables in the system that can describe such that you're going to describe all the states of the system. It doesn't satisfy the Bell inequality, right? But there is something called pilot wave theory, which allows for global variables that will work, but it's a lot more assumptions. It does work, but it's not a local variable model. And if you don't have a local hidden variable model, then that means that inside that system, there is nothing in that system to tell you when a certain event's going to happen, like spontaneous fission or weak nuclear decay. There is no information in that system. It does not exist. There's no causality. That's a fundamental thing of physics in that model, right? That model could be wrong. You could, again, try to use Bohmian mechanics or something, but under the Copenhagen interpretation, you have
what you're basically saying, but undermines. So what you just said in brief undermines the whole premise of cause and effect, which far as my layman understanding was, is that is the root of the scientific method. So you just taught me something that I did not know.
Sygard said, yep, stop it. I already said you're right, Steve. I agree with Copenhagen. Yes, I'm smart. I mean, intimidated by smart.
Sign knows the deal. Okay, so getting back to that, you were relating that to, just to tie this back to what we were talking about, you were relating that to which one? One of the Thomist arguments for the existence of God, and the first premise being there's no such thing as an uncaused cause, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that whole thing is for like a prime mover, right?
That's what you were relating this.
Well, that's more the argument of motion, right? The argument of motion basically is saying that because we have things in motion.
That's exactly right. One premise. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Right, but the thing I was going to tell you, I take the atheist side on that argument, is an assertion. It's not a fact. It's an assertion. You know,
well, all these things. Well, hang on. The thing that you got to recognize is that all these things are assertions, right? An argument is an assertion. So when you have like the argument from motion, you're just asserting things. As a matter of fact, I had somebody tell me the other day that my argument was flawed because I didn't prove the premises. Now let's think about this. Premises are things that you assume, right? You don't have to accept them.
I think that's actually kind of sketchy, though.
No, it's not sketchy.
Aren't there premises that you prove?
You prove the argument by making the assumption propositions are true, and that goes to the soundness of the argument. If it is a logically structured argument, right, if it follows some kind of rule of inference, it's like modus ponens, right, means it's logically valid, right? So if I say something like, if the moon is made of green cheese, I'm a cow. The moon is made of green cheese, therefore I'm a cow. That is perfectly valid logically, okay? It's a logical argument, and it's perfectly valid.
Right, right.
An actual rule of inference.
Because you're saying if the moon were made of green cheese, then you would be a cow. And then you said the moon is made of green cheese, hence you are a cow.
Okay. Yeah, all that means is that the conclusion has to follow from the premises if the premises are true. That's all validity really means. But the soundness is bad because obviously the premises aren't true, right? If the moon is not made of green cheese, and I'm obviously
not a cow. That's what I thought. That's why I thought you do actually have to either deal in a premise that everyone accepts as true or prove the premise, don't you?
You don't prove the premise. You just accept the premise. If I accept that the moon is made of green cheese, then I'm a cow, you know, because that's the soundness of the argument. The premises are saying if you accept all these premises that if the moon is made of green cheese and I'm a cow and the moon is made of green cheese, therefore I'm a cow, you're accepting that those premises. But obviously, I would reject those premises. So you can have a logically valued argument that's false. The entire argument is false, clearly, because the soundness is not good, right?
Right.
Okay. So when you have premises, again, you never prove the premises. It's just like any assumption, and they are assumptions. You don't prove assumptions. That's why they're called assumptions or presuppositions, if you want. So I thought it was really odd when somebody didn't like the argument because they didn't prove the premises. I'm like, well, why don't you tell me why you don't accept the premises? Because that's what I'm offering. I'm offering you the argument by telling you what I want you to assume for the premises. And you got to tell me why you don't assume that. Why are you rejecting the premises? That's how it works. But they don't think that way for some reason. But like the argument from motion with the first cause, we know now that the initial movement may have been caused by what's called spontaneous symmetry breaking, right? We know now that motion is a lot more complicated than what Aquinas knew. We know that time is a lot more complicated than what Aquinas knew. And so there might be some other things. And by the way, you know, we might have discovered a fifth force just recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, he didn't know about these types of things. And so to him, it made sense for a causal relationship, right? You have the regress of causality that you have something moving now, something had to have that move that and that move that. And you have this chain of causality. And the way he described it was all motion is just changing from potentiality to actuality. And so you have a potential state, and by doing something with that potential state, you cause an actuality, you cause motion, which doesn't work in quantum mechanics. But these are really good arguments.
Right, but to sum it up in relation to what we were just talking about, the proofs, for the Aquinas proofs, so you're basically saying that they were good for the time.
Yes.
Based on the knowledge that he was dealing with, they were excellent or really, really, really sharp, but they just don't cut mustard today.
They're brilliant for the time. And by the way, chaosism points it out very distinctly. He says valid and sound for deductive reasoning, cogent and weak, strong for inductive reasoning. I totally agree. There's one thing you're missing, though. I would actually add in convincing. I think a lot of people neglect that convincing
aspect. Well, that's the key. That's the key. Because the reason why a Christian apologist presents these is because they are supposed to be convincing, and they aren't. And there's a bunch of different reasons that they're not convincing. But that's actually the key, because you're not just trying to impress, you know, other Christians with your cool arguments, which sometimes it seems like that's what they're trying to do. You're actually trying to question of is your revealed truth. I believe have truth. So my, if I'm to make an argument based on reason that I'm going to present to you, Steve, who doesn't believe me or agree with me, it's supposed to be, it's for you. It's to point you in the direction of you agreeing with my revealed truth. If it doesn't do that, there's no point in doing it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I do, but I think that these things were designed more for the believer. I think they were more designed for the person who already believed, not to convert the non-believer. Right. And especially nowadays, I got to ask my theist friends, how many people have ever really been convinced by Aquinas' five ways in modern times? I've never seen it happen.
I don't see how it could. I mean, maybe it could. I'm sure Stephanie will get someone with it. Does Stephanie use it? Is Stephanie there? Stephanie will get someone with it. But other than that, nobody else will. But yeah, I don't see, to me, that's not really how the whole deal goes down. But anyways, let's go back into where we were with your, so we're in the 2 years into your channel, and you're, where are we at? 2 years into the channel. When did you meet your co-worker?
Kyle?
Yes.
Okay.
Somewhere along the way, your channel switches from, you start to have a dog in the fight. Like you, as far as I'm understanding, you started out your channel kind of just sort of debunking young earth creationists, but you weren't necessarily taking a position on God per se. And then you start what?
Okay. So basically, as you guys may know, I was involved in a group called the Great Debate Community for quite some time. There was, my goal was to get the Great Debate Community to be a Great Debate Community to be kind of something that was known among YouTubers, somewhere where if you are a member of the Great Debate Community, you stood out as somebody that could articulate arguments, or at the very least, go in an argument and actually do halfway decently. Right? You don't have to know this stuff, but at least have the wherewithal and the balls to go actually put your information out there. Whether you're right or wrong doesn't matter, but it takes a lot of guts to argue on air. It is not easy.
No, it's not easy.
You're out there. You're putting stuff out there, right? Would you agree?
Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. It's a lot harder, especially – it's a lot – just from my own experience with it, like what we're doing now I like much more, just like generally chatting about the stuff. But there's a lot of different challenges that come that you don't anticipate before you do it. It's a lot harder than it looks, and you know, keeping yourself calm and focused is – 85% of the battle in some ways. Go ahead.
The Great Debate Community was set up to do that. Unfortunately, there were some problems internally, some schisms. I wanted a different direction. I wanted to have a higher caliber. Other people wanted this more basal trolling, make a response video and just bag on other people. And that bored me, to be honest with you. I didn't want to do that because anybody could do that. I wanted something higher. So there was a little bit of schism. But you know what? It's fine because the Great Debate Community now is stronger than ever. We've got almost 1,700 members. We have, I'd say, 50 PhDs and master's levels people. We have some of the biggest name YouTubers in the skeptic community, in the Great Debate Community. But it wasn't the vehicle to take me to where I wanted to go because of some of the issues with it.
Are there Christians in the Great Debate Community?
Oh, yeah. Considerably not Christians. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, my dear friend who passed away, Jade, she was a member of the Great Debate Community, loved it. I think Sigart is a member of the Great Debate Community. Chaosm is – everybody in your live chat is a member of the Great Debate Community, I think. I know SJ is. So, yeah, I mean, pretty much everybody who watches these things is a member of the Great Debate Community. SJ, they may not participate much, but – what? Yeah, SJ is too.
How did SJ get a wrench? Had a wrench on your channel.
Because she was getting timed out maliciously, and I didn't think it was appropriate. And she's been on our channel many times, and I think she – we had to give her a little – guidance, but I think she'll moderate fairly as long as she doesn't abuse it.
Okay. I'm giving her a wrench as soon as I figure out how to do it. I have no idea how to do it. I'm giving her a wrench. Mute everybody, Stephanie. Mute anybody who says anything about me at all. Listen, it's totally positive. Mute at will. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, Kyle was going to do this documentary on the Great Debate Community, and he said, "Steve, you know, you're the kind of the host and the owner of the Great Debate Community, so I've got to get you in this documentary." He had already talked to Brett Keene, and he talked to a few other people, but he's like, "I really, really like your what you have to say. I like your videos. You know, you're on top of things, and you present things in a way that a lot of people can understand it." Because Kyle is not a science person. His expertise is like graphic design and he's very creative. I mean, he's probably one of the most creative people that I've ever met when it comes to design. I could never do anything that he does when it comes to these layouts. He's just fucking brilliant. And I didn't have that. So, we started talking, and he said, "You know what? We should do a podcast kind of thing, right? Forget the documentary. Let's, you know what? Let's just do a podcast." And I said, "I love it. Let's jump into it." And we started the podcast, and that went over pretty successfully. As of today, we have over 100,000 downloads on our podcast.
Cool.
But he didn't really want to get into YouTube, and I was telling him, "No, dude, trust me. YouTube is where it's at because I have a lot of friends on YouTube. I know a lot of people on YouTube. I knew Arn and I knew a bunch of other big players." I said, "You know, let's try it out." And so our first episode, we had Kent Hovind and Dr. Mays, right? On a podcast, just knocked it out of the park, right? Because, you know, Dr. Mays is a very brilliant biologist, and Kent, well, he's Kent. but he's a big name, right?
Yeah, he said, "How do you get that big of a name that quick? Were you already well-known because of the Great Debate Community?"
Yeah, I already had some either popularity, notoriety, or whatever you want to call it from the Great Debate Community. So people had knew who I was because I had Arn on my show a few times or channel. Okay. I had Kent on before. So, I mean, I was hosting the debates with King Crocoduck and Ken Hovind long before Non Sequitur. Okay. And anyway, so I realized that, look, with my contacts and my limited amount of science and things like that, and Kyle's ability to market and make graphics and all this other stuff, we have a winning formula. And we had a goal.
"I got the brains. You got the looks. Let's make lots of money.
Make a money."
That's great. I wrote something. You know that?
Yeah.
That's a great song. Actually.
We might actually throw that on a video. So we wanted to be bigger than Drunken Peasants. And by the way, we already are. Because
are you really?
Well, they broke up, so that's we get more views than they get now because they broke up. So I by default, right? And we were on Drunken Peasants the other night.
Before you go on, what are they? Is one of them like the brother of the Amazing Atheists, or what's their association?
Yeah, TJ and Scotty were brothers.
Okay, I thought so.
And
okay.
Friends with Ben, where him and Ben are brothers. I don't remember. I think TJ and Scotty are brothers, aren't they? I don't remember the family dynamics. But anyways, they all split up. And by the way, I liked them all. I was never a big Drunken Peasants fan to begin with, but I loved TJ's monologues. I think he does some of the most exceptional on his own monologues, but I was not one of the DP crowd because I just didn't find the toilet humor any good, right? But I really liked Ben. Ben was really nice. He wasn't feeling very well, but, it happens.
Right.
SJ asks who broke up. Drunken Peasants broke up. But anyways, we got together and we said, let's do the YouTube videos. So we started doing that, and that just took off. And people started liking the format because the dialogue that I had envisioned for my channel, for the Great Debate Community, that's what we put on Non Sequitur. These dialogues. Let's have the conversations. I couldn't pull it off on my own channel. I admit that. I tried, but I failed at it. But I did try. But the plans were there, right? I had the idea. I had the concept. Kyle had the other half of that concept. And so I was like, done, And, Kyle and I don't agree upon a lot of things. But we do agree upon the main things. And that's what I think makes the show strong.
Well, you kind of innately agree on the concept of the show, as far as I can tell. You are broadcasting vision from this internal sense. You probably don't agree on wise, I think that's what you meant, referring to like things you don't agree with, you know, in the theological department. But in terms of what you're putting out there, it seems to me like you're both in unison or in unity. Is that true?
You broke up there. What?
Oh, did I break up? It seems to me like you guys have agree on the vision of the show itself. You guys are in unity in terms of what you're putting out there, what you want people to see, right?
Yes. Yeah, I think there was a demand for it. Because, again, all I saw was people just bashing on one group and picking on the slow people. Yeah, that's fun. Don't get me wrong. There are some people that call the Clown Car Posse. I do enjoy occasionally throwing shit towards because they're just so stupid as ridiculous. But I can't make a whole channel out of that. And I don't want to, right? I mean, I want people to be edified. They're not going to learn much by me just pointing out that a person who has no education whatsoever thinks that the Earth is 6,000 years old.
Right. You know? It's actually – it's not that fun. It's fun in tiny – it's like – you know what it's like? The did you ever watch American Idol where they have the bad auditions right at the beginning? You know, it's fun in small doses, but too much of it and you start to get really sick of it and hate
right,
yourself
exactly.
For, and hate yourself for participating because you get hooked up. It's like, you know, what are those stupid shows that used to be on TV? The like those talk shows with you know, the guy sleeps with his sister and they come on the talk show.
Oh, not Morton Downey Jr., but
they like him.
Corrado, yes. Rivera and
right.
Jerry Springer, like, oh, that kind of stuff.
Jerry Springer, that's the one I was trying to think. Guy's the mayor of like Cleveland or something. They're fun up to a point, and then you get really sick of yourself for watching them and enjoying them, and it's the same idea. But your show is sometimes like that, every like once in a while, but then you also go try to have more ambitious, you know, edifying discussions and debates. Right?
Yeah, because I think that the discussions better suss things out, right? Because if you have two people that disagree on something, you get a more diverse understanding of the topic because you're looking at it from two different points of view. Now, there are certain things that are not debatable. I've never labeled a flat earth debate as a debate. Maybe very early on I did. You know, people may find me in an old video me saying debate, so I can't say that. But I don't now call them debates because they're not debates. There is nothing debatable about flat earth, right? It's just wrong. It's one of those things that it's not, do you believe in flat earth? It's, do you understand why the earth is not round? That's the only question to ask somebody. And I'm the same way with young earth creationism. There's no debate on that. It's done deal. It's wrong. But if somebody wants to say, let's debate about the nature of God, fair game. Go ahead. Right. Let's talk about morality. Fair game. Right. These things are debatable because there may not be a set answer to it, at least that we're aware of. And I think the great debate question, which is the reason why it's called the great debate community, is the unanswerable question of God's existence. I think that when people throw things out there like, oh, the great debate's over, God doesn't exist, or the great debate's over, it's been established, God does exist. Whenever I've talked to those types of people, none of them, for example, understand the actual debate. They don't understand the topic. And it's frustrating too because they make these proclamations with such a surety, but then when you ask them to actually demonstrate in some conceivable way why they believe that they're justified to hold that position, none of them ever do. None of them. That goes for theists and that goes for atheists alike. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't give a good justification for their belief. Sure. Okay. And might even be able to claim a knowledge claim. Right? Possible. They might think that they're justified to call it knowledge. But when you say that the debate is over and you made a conclusive thing that has been troubling mankind for thousands of years, you know what? That's arrogant. That is arrogant to think that all these brilliant people that still don't know the answer to it, that have sit around and actually formulated these types of arguments and formulated reasons against the arguments, to come in, you know, in 2018 and go, oh, well, yeah, we all know there's no such thing as God. It's like, no, we don't. I don't know that. That's one of the reasons why I'm agnostic. And that
I didn't realize there were any atheists who were that gung ho about it. Who would be like,
oh sure,
I guess I did. I guess I did know that. Never mind. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah, I did know that.
Yeah. No, I mean, a lot of people do, right? They think that by making a proclamation, it must be ontologically true. There's a couple different groups out there that I noticed, right? I mean, you have your theist, most of them will say, to some degree, a lot of it is based upon faith, right? I mean, the whole part of the Bible is talking about faith, right? I think that if you made a claim that you know something to be true, like the God exists, where's the faith, right? I mean, you're making an epistemic claim that you need to show why you think you have sufficient justification to say that. Because everything you know about what you think you're worshiping could completely be wrong, right? I mean,
let me ask you a question epistemologically. Is there what when you had your experience? Your experience, by the way, the one that turned you into a what was it? I'm about to say Muslim. You didn't become a Muslim.
Mormon.
You were almost a Muslim. Did any Muslims ever convince you of anything?
No. No, I am not. Okay. I you know, I
was that people, the only
I say, look, I do believe there's, was it my own experience? Yeah, for the most part, yeah. But I will say that Islamic phobia might be a real thing, but there's a reason for it. You know, I think there are some dangers to certain religions. Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a PR problem in the Muslim community. Because if they were famously beheading people,
yeah.
You know, if Christians were like famously like in like South America, there was like Roman Catholic groups that were like showing on American TV them like killing people. You know, there'd be a big problem in the Christian community, PR problem in the Christian community, and I'd have to address it probably every time I presented myself as a Christian. You know, look at the Roman Catholic Church. That's probably something that we Christians are going to have to talk about, you know, at least 10% of the time we're on air now, because it's, but anyways, go ahead. Was that the only spiritual experience before I asked you about epistemology?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I said, that's pretty much it. I mean, I might have some other minor things. But I mean, the only thing that kept me that, you know, attached to theism was that, but then I realized that doesn't get you to theism. At most I can say by critical analysis that I know now, I felt something. But who the hell knows what it was? I mean, I can't make that connection between that and some kind of theologically sound thing like the Holy Ghost or anything like that. There's no connection to be had there, right? It's a jump in reasoning.
What would it take for you, Mr. like lead dog agnostic, to be epistemologically convinced? What do you think would make you convinced?
Right. Just when you say epistemologically convinced, you just mean believe. Believe means to be convinced of something.
Okay.
So you're asking me what would it take for me to believe?
Or break down the epistemology so that a Christian could hear it. Like this is what I, Steve, would need a Christian to.
Yeah, I would need something like a visitation or something. You know, I'm not one of those people. There's people out there that say, look it, God can come down in front of me right now, and I still wouldn't believe it. And I'm like, well, then you're an idiot. You know, I'm like, I don't think a lot of people would believe, they say that with bravado, right? But I think that if anybody had an actual real experience, if they did exist, they would not be so cavalier about it, right?
Right, of course. So your experience was real.
Oh, yeah, it was a real experience. Oh, there's no question about that. I know that I knew it. There's no question about that.
And it was inexplicable to you.
Yeah.
But it was not enough to keep you in, especially when there were other aspects of the faith that you found personally unappealing.
Right, right. And I had to ask, why would God take me to this particular religion? By the way, I love the people. One of my dearest friends I've known since sixth grade might be coming down this Sunday to visit with me. I've known him like forever. He's still Mormon. But, you know, I couldn't read the Book of Mormon and go, yeah, right. I accept the archaeology. I can't read the Book of Abraham and accept the readings by which they gave the papyrus, you know, from Joseph McGivern, the papyrus. Now, I'm not going to say that, you know, he was a complete fraud such that he was doing it all for money or something like that. I don't think he ever made money off of it. I don't know what the reasons are, but there's all kinds of different leaders from all kinds of different churches, right? I mean, every church you can think of has some kind of leader attached to it. So right. Mormonism is no different in that regard, right? But you don't know their reasonings why they do what they do. They could actually be real believers. They could be delusional. I have no idea. But I couldn't take all the other stuff that was associated with the Mormon Church from what they were doing and reconciling it with my own personal moral code.
Right. Okay. So that's exactly where I was getting at. So let's say the same experience happened to you, but you join the Mormon church, and instead of them presenting you with the Book of Mormon, they present you with a more generalized philosophical book. Like, I don't know if you ever read the Tao Te Ching, something that was more palatable, that you were like, okay, that's cool. Those are cool ideas. And then they did not necessarily war against your inner sense of right and wrong. They were, you kind of saw them as good out there in the world. You might have stayed in.
Yes.
Is that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair to say. Yeah. Yeah, I think so, because, you know, I always had an affinity toward the church. And I like the church. I mean, I people say Mormons are like a cult. They're not. I don't think they're anywhere cult at all. I've seen cult mentality. The people in the, if you go to a ward in a Mormon church, are the nicest people you ever want to meet. They really do care about people. I helped them out with food banks. Never got into their cultist mindset. Never got into young creationism. Never was indoctrinated. Right. I mean, it's just basically they said, okay, you want to know about this? We'll tell you about it, kind of stuff. Right. They didn't really care that much. If I questioned or anything like that, it wasn't like you have to believe this or anything like that. I didn't experience any of that. Now, granted, though, and I will say this as a qualifier, I was in California, and from what I understand, because I lived in Utah as well,
yeah,
Mormons in Utah, yeah, there's a difference between Mormon Utah and California Utah, and I probably agree with that. But I never really went to church in the Utah one, so I don't have first-hand experience. But I will say that's probably going to be true.
Everything. My wife considers herself like a hardcore Republican. She's a California version of that, which means like you put her in like Oklahoma, she'd probably be considered like the biggest liberal in the world. You know, it's like that's how things are. You know, you get back in like the Bible people in the Bible Belt. You know, I'm a California Christian. That's very different from whatever a Tulsa, Oklahoma, you know, Christian.
Yeah, no, so that's true. Well,
definitely.
Because
the same idea.
Especially with Mormon Christians, right? Bible Belt Christians are going to be a lot different than what you find in Hollywood.
Right.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, we live out in, you know, we live in L.A., so that's a totally different thing than people who, you know, part of it there's a whole cultural thing, you know. But keep going.
Oh, I was just gonna say, yeah. You know, so you know, to get back like into the church or any church, you know, I would need some kind of visitation or something like that. Something that I wouldn't bother people. I wouldn't be one of those people that go, "Oh, I'm having a delusional thing." I'm pretty sane. I've never had any kind of reason to think that I'm not in possession of my faculties. Now, granted, I've had auditory and visual hallucinations before because of sleep deprivation. Right? Or
really?
Just sleep paralysis. Yeah, I've had sleep paralysis all my life, insomnia, and sleep what do they call it? I think it's sleep apnea, I think it is. But I've had a lot of things, sleeping problems, right? And I've had times where I've had actual visual and auditory hallucinations many times. I've actually visualized an actual demon floating by my head. Like in
what?
Like full wingspan, everything.
Weird.
And
when you were Mormon or
no, this was
after you quit Mormonism. See,
six years ago. This was 6 years ago.
What'd you do? Did you pray against it in Jesus' name?
No. Actually, I was like, this is freaking pretty cool.
yeah,
I
you're an agnostic at that point. So like, oh, cool, the devil.
Well, yeah, because I've had so many experiences that I've known that they're all in my mind, right? And I actually – there was one – I'll tell you this though. I had a while ago – this was sometime some years ago. But somebody had actually said that. Hey, Steve, next time you have one of those hypnagogic hallucinations, pray in the name of Jesus that it leaves you. You know, do a test. And I thought of it from a scientific point of view. I'm like, well, what have I got to lose, right? Right? Because when you're in a lucid dream state, you are aware. You can control your actions. Okay, they're amazing. I recommend anybody who has never tried a lucid dream – go read about it. Go try to induce one. They're amazing. Absolutely amazing.
You heard it here. They say don't try it at home. Try it at home.
Try it at home. Try it at home. You're not dangerous.
The new cool drug.
No one's ever died yet. Cool drugs. Don't do drugs. You don't even need alcohol. Just learn how to do induced lucid dreams.
Lucid dream.
By the way, I've been able to induce mine five times about. It's not easy. Cool. So that's how hard it is. Although I've had many of them, only five times or so have I ever willfully induced them. But I did experiment. So I was in a dream state, lucid dream state, and these entities were there. Wow. They kind of look like people, but kind of not. But I was like, whatever, man. So I was like, you know, in the name of Jesus, be gone. And they just looked at me like, what the hell is that supposed to mean? And I was like, you know what? I tried. You know, that was it. That was all it was. I never get scared by anything.
In the name of Jesus, we're atheists.
I haven't had a nightmare in ages. Yeah, nothing scares me when it comes to dreams because I know that it's all not real. So I can't remember the last time I had a nightmare.
So you didn't think that when you saw the demons, you didn't give that any sort of
because they were I knew they weren't. I didn't know they knew they weren't real. You know.
Okay. So when you hear about like life after death experiences, are you kind of thinking that that's what's happening to people?
Yes.
Their brain chemistry is overflowing, and they're attaching religious significance to it because of the religion they were trained in. I'd imagine that's how
I think that's more likely the case, yes. I don't have any reason not to believe that.
Right. But you are fair-minded enough that if you're convinced, your one spiritual experience was convincing enough that if all the other things were equal and you felt cool about the church that you were part of, you probably wouldn't have walked away from it.
Yes.
So that's something to keep in mind if you're a Christian listening to this. And do a much better job of being good people all around.
And I'll give you some other, since you primarily have a theistic audience, I'll give them a piece of advice from an agnostic. And first, let me clarify why I'm agnostic. An agnostic is real simple, a person who doesn't believe but hasn't assigned a truth value to the proposition of at least one God exists. Okay, so when you talk about like a lack theist or a person who doesn't believe there's a God but claims to be an atheist, which is fine. That's a colloquial way of doing it. I reject that, right? To me, not believing a God is not sufficient to be called an atheist. To be an atheist, right, you have to have a necessary precondition of not believing in God, but it's not sufficient because in academia, atheism is the belief that theism is false or their belief that no gods, right? That is straight up truth. Anybody who watches this video who doesn't believe that, go read a book on it because I'm not BSing you. All this stuff you ever hear on YouTube and G+ about, atheism is just lack of belief, that is wrong when it comes to philosophy. That is wrong when it comes to academia. It only holds true in colloquial terms, and if you want to use it, that's fine. But if a person tells you, I am not atheist because I use formal definitions, don't call them an atheist because epistemically they are not atheists. It's just as bad as a theist calling an atheist a theist because they know God because of Romans, right? So don't mislabel people. But let me give you the best piece of advice for theists. If you're going to convince somebody that what you're saying is true, stay away from these radicalized evangelicals that don't know what the hell they're talking about because they make all theists look bad. When you have people out there that are so damn dumb that don't even understand the most basic of concepts, and they're representing theists, they make theists look stupid. Because my thing is, why is God using these people as their PR peers? Why is their PR people? You are Zygarde I like, SJ I like, good representations. I mean, SJ I think is bad at her apologetics, but she's a good person, right? I believe she means no ill will. She has a good heart, right? That's fine. Yeah, totally. But these other people are duplicitous, man. Just duplicitous.
Well, and they give it's that's even in the Bible. You know, you just quoted the Bible. It said, "But because of you, my name is blasphemed amongst the Gentiles because of poorly, you know, Christians going out there not doing it correctly." But even worse than that is you got a lot of them. I don't really want to go into because I don't want to bring them up. But you know, you got some people out there who were relatively famous and briefly. Because they're making arguments that are actually really kind of evil or totally counterproductive to, you know, making Christianity look good or being an ambassador to Christ, let's say. Total counterproductive.
Stephanie
and Cy are ambassadors for Christ in the good way. They're presenting their case and they're trying to the best of their ability to be diplomatic and not hateful and, you know, put the best foot forward, correct?
Yes. Yeah, and like I said, I don't have to agree with them to recognize that. And I think that a lot of atheist non-believers make that mistake. And here's the thing. You know, I'd rather have somebody like Seigart that I know knows science and that I'm just in awe of when it comes to his expertise. And I'd love one day to maybe actually talk about more about his expertise. We never really have, and I think it sucks because I really do like to learn a little more biochemistry. It's never been a field that I never really studied and I never got good. I took inorganic chemistry, right? I had to qualify secondary chemist. But that's all inorganic stoichiometric chemistry, not the same as organic by any stretch of the imagination. And so I wish I could learn something from him like Vesper theory more. Like I had to learn Vesper theory and
Vespa theory, like the Vespa, like little mopeds.
No, when it comes to valence of electrons.
Oh, okay. I know. Like, yeah, I know really well.
A valence shell electron perirepulsion. Basically, when you're dealing with orbitals, you have sp1, sp2, sp3, and these are hybrids that exist because of the sharing of the orbitals of the electrons. And it's fascinating how it works. And you look at the 3D modeling, and it's really awesome. I like that kind of stuff, right? And if I can remember some of that stuff from his like first year stuff, I would be thrilled to have a conversation like that. But long story short, you know, I don't have to agree with him about his theism to be for him to be an ally, because we agree upon the stuff that I agree upon the most, or that I want to agree upon the most, like secularism, you know, get creationism out of schools, teach evolution. If he believes in all that stuff, the rest is geedunk. I don't care. He can believe Jesus walked on water, and I'll be like standing right beside him and going, go for it, buddy. Doesn't bother me, you know, because he will say, you cannot teach creationism in school. That's the thing that I'm concerned about, right?
Right. No, I totally understand. There's some things that are you have core values and beliefs that phrase, but yeah, no, I totally understand what you mean. There's things that are deeply important to you about what we discussed, and there are other things that are, you know, they're interesting, but they're irrelevant. You know what they chalk them up to personal beliefs, and they don't contradict any of your own innate code of ethics. So you're like, whatever, live and live, live and let live. It's not a challenge to. It's not something that you find morally wrong.
Yeah, it doesn't affect my life if somebody has a belief, whether that belief is false or not. As long as it's not encroaching upon the secular society, it is not my battle.
In a way that you think is, it's possible. And let's see, since. You seem to be in an agreeable place. It's possible that even we could encroach on secular society in a positive way rather than a negative way. You just don't want it encroaching in a negative way, interrupting what you think is proper science, or, you know, trying to teach this in schools that you think is wrong. But it's possible that it could, you know, people could bring their Christian values in a positive way, and then you'd be fine, as long as you thought it was positive. Right?
No, not really. I don't think I don't think there should be any Christian values in school. I don't like the Ten Commandments in school.
No, that's not what I meant.
What do you mean?
I meant like if I have I'm a Christian. You're totally cool with that as long as my beliefs are kept to myself, or when they encroach on society at large, they're
yes.
That
oh,
you
absolutely.
Think are positive.
Sure.
They're positive.
Yeah, I mean,
you
that's
only
why I
object
kinda,
to it when it's negative.
Yeah, exactly. I know a lot of anti-theists, and I the only way I stand for anti-theists is when people misrepresent anti-theism, right?
Right.
Because I concur with like Gallus Cranium. His definition of anti-theism is what I use. This is what most people use that read the literature.
What's his? I don't know.
Anti-theism is somebody that's against the concept of God or against religion. It's not against God himself. It's not somebody who hates God. It's not somebody who believes God does not exist. Because I've heard people tell me, "Oh, Steve, you're so wrong. You cannot be an atheist who says that you believe God does not exist, because that makes you an anti-theist." Well, no, it does not. Excuse me. They're completely different things. And so Cosmic Skeptic made that mistake, and Gallus Cranium actually corrected him on that. Atheism and anti-theism are very different things. And there's such a muddy in the water when you're using these terms, because people have used them differently. Like if I say strong atheist, that just means in the literature – an atheist. It means a philosophical or propositional atheist that believes God does not exist. That's what it is. But Dawkins took that and turned it into something else. He took strong atheist to mean somebody who's 100% sure there's no gods. That's not what it ever meant.
Right. Well, but the thing that all atheism means is a lack of belief in God. The reason why people were latching onto that colloquial definition is that it's much easier to defend. it's kind of a way of fudging a debate, because I don't mind, because I accept if you want to say the burden of proof is all on me, that's fine. But the reason why they would latch on to that as the definition of atheism is to you know, it's much easier to defend in an argument. It's much easier to – it's hard to win an argument against that definition, because you can just – then I got to prove everything in the argument.
Okay. First of all, I respect the theist because they will take on the burden of proof, because they recognize that if they're going to say that something is true, there's an attached burden of proof. But here's what a lot of people don't understand. The burden of proof in that situation does not mean that you prove God exists. A theist does not have to prove God exists to be a theist. They don't have to prove God exists to accept a burden of proof. That's not what it means. It doesn't mean to prove anything. It is an epistemic burden, meaning that they need to give justification to why they hold the position. Okay? It's not evidential burden of proof. It's an epistemic burden of proof. There's a huge difference, right? And I wrote a blog on this. Anyone wants to read it, you can go to www.greatdebatecommunity.com, look in the philosophy section, and I wrote a blog on this particular thing, Atheist and the Burden of Proof. Because when you confuse those two, you make I'll link it to you. There's a huge difference between the two, because if, for example, in a science setting, right, and I'm sure Cy will concur with this, if you say theory of relativity is wrong, okay, you have the onus to demonstrate that. Nobody has shit else to do, no matter what. If they disbelieve you or not believe you, they do not have anything they need to do in that particular case. That is a monolateral thing. That is a one-sided thing. Just like if you're when Cy got his PhD, I'm pretty damn sure he had to stand in front of a bunch of people, whatever review board, and defend his thesis, right? Nobody on the board, right. He couldn't ask any questions. They didn't get they could have said whatever they want. They could have asked him whatever they want, but they're not the ones putting forth that claim. They have no onus. But those are rare instances when you don't have an onus, right? Defending your PhD, submitting a claim against science. But when it comes to theological claims, when it comes to an interrogatory between two people, both of them come to the table. Both of them have a burden of proof, right? And for somebody to sit there and say, oh, well, I just don't believe you. I lack a belief. I got to tell you, most of the time that's dishonest, because I've known a lot of them have said that, but deep down they do believe that gods don't exist, and they're just trying to get away from that burden, because they don't understand that the burden for an atheist for a justification is pretty damn easy. I could make the burden.
Right, of course.
For being a strong atheist. But I'm epistemically not that position, right, so I don't do that.
Right. All I'm trying to say is that, and most of the atheist-theist back and forth are unproductive, so there's a lot of different ways. But why they would adopt a colloquial definition, even though they don't necessarily believe the colloquial definition, is that the Christian will not, if you say God doesn't exist, now I, the Christian, will start trying to bust your balls by going, oh yeah, prove it. And it become, you know, that's why it's much easier just to adopt a colloquial definition, even though it isn't necessarily all that accurate. Now, go ahead.
Yeah, the thing is, if I can recommend your theist audience. Look, if you want to discuss these topics and you run across somebody that says, you know what, I don't have any belief, or I don't believe you, blah, 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 walk away. Walk away. Say, okay, whatever. Why the hell do I care if you believe me? Find somebody else.
Yeah.
Then the reason I say that is because it's a waste of freaking time.
It's a total waste of time. I agree with Steve completely. Listen to him.
If,
wise. There's a reason why he's in charge of these guys.
I'm not in charge of anybody. Nobody listens to me. Are you kidding? But I'll give advice to the atheist, too, that might ever listen to this. Think about this, atheist. If you are trying to convince a theist that your position is correct, and I'm going to, because arguendo, I'm saying that atheism is a belief, because that's how I use the word. So however you believe it, that word is supposed to be used, that's up to you. But in my conversation, atheism is a belief. So if you believe that there are no gods, why don't you provide an argument for that, right? What's more convincing to a theist? An atheist who says, I just don't believe you, and you go, okay, who cares? Or somebody says, hey, you know what, Craig? Not only do I not believe you, I believe you're wrong, and I believe there are no gods. And here's my reasons why. It is more likely the theist will sit and listen and have that conversation and have the potential to no longer be a theist if that's your goal. But you're never going to convert a theist by saying, I don't believe you.
Just or never have happened. A productive conversation.
Or have a productive conversation.
Right. Because the objections, if you say, I don't, this is part of why when I'm getting atheists on the show is I'm trying to dig in to try, not with you right now, but in general, I want to try and dig in and find out, you know, why they became an atheist. You know, you got Godless Crane was on the show, and I'll probably have him back soon.
He's great.
You know, he's a cool guy. He's not Shannon, but he's a cool guy.
Nobody's Shannon. Yeah,
no, well, nobody.
Shannon's the best, though. I have to say that because if she ever listens to this and doesn't hear me say that, she gets mad and beats me. I'm just kidding.
She hasn't yet. So,
she what?
GM Skeptic video. I've listened to that, right? Pretty good.
She was good. Yeah, yeah. But see, you know what? The people that you name, like, look, when you have Shannon, you have Apologia, you have Thomas Westbrook, you have Goddess Cranium, you've got Kyle, you've got, you know, all these really good atheists that are honest people, right? But
right.
yet you have a group of theists out there that always talks about this really mystical group out there of atheists that I don't know who the hell they're talking about. Now, there are some militant atheists that are just stupid.
They're there. They're out there. Granted, I don't know who they're talking about.
Granted.
They bothered me.
Yeah, no, granted. They do exist, right? But they always seem to either tactically or implicitly try to relate that small little militant type of atheist group, which I can only think of a couple of them, to the whole. And so they're saying, oh, all you atheists. No. All those atheists that I mentioned, all the ones that, you know, deal with our little circles, those are good people. And for them to lump them into these militant ones that I think are just assholes, that's not fair, right? That's like saying, well, Craig, you know, you're a theist, so that must mean you're a young earth creationist or, you know, something like that. Right. No, that's not what it means.
Right. I totally agree with that. And I don't do that at all. Like, I make a big distinction between the cool guy atheists who I like and the dickhead atheists who are out there, though. They're out there. You know, there were times where I would put up a video and people I don't know would just come and insult me for no reason. You know, happened when I first got on Twitter. Now I know a lot of the people, so it doesn't happen that much.
Yeah.
But there used to be people who would come on Twitter just to bust my ass, who I'd never met. I didn't know. And they'd be like, well, you're just a dumb,
welcome to my world.
You know.
Welcome to my world, brother. I get people that I don't – okay. It's kind of weird because as you spend more time on the internet, more time on YouTube, you obviously pick up more subscribers. You obviously pick up more followers if you're doing something good, right? If you're doing something well. I'm at the point now that I just cannot remember everybody. And I can't respond to every comment that is left at this point. It's just physically impossible. I'm nowhere near.
You don't have time for these little people.
No,
please.
No, not at all.
You're that one guy from that one debate. You're that one guy from that one debate when the guy's like, Steve, remember me? And you're like, oh, yeah, you're that one dude from the debate last year sometime.
Yeah, you know, what was that? I don't know. You were the flat earth guy. No, not that guy. No, you're the younger creationist. No, that guy. Oh, okay. Oh, you're the guy that drinks piss. Yeah, I'm him. Okay. Because we have a few of those. So. You know, I do try to read all the comments. I really do. I spend hours a day just.
You got to learn to pray.
But I get people messaging me that I don't know, right? And it's fine. I want people to message me. I do enjoy it. But they think that I kind of like recognize their like Facebook name from their name they use like a live chat. Unless they tell me, I'm not going to put two and two together. So I'm like, who is this person? You know. But there's, you know, you deal with a lot of people, obviously. So.
You gotta practice the phrase, dude, I am Steve McRae. I don't got time for people like you.
I'm just a nobody on YouTube.
I'm Steve McRae. You're one half the non sequiturs.
Well, still, but it's still, I mean, we're not like at that epic level yet. I mean, we're trying.
Well, you'll be there. You'll
I hope so. I really do.
You've grown pretty quick. Almost everyone in that crowd that you mentioned. They're not just cool people. They're like they're going to be the big time atheists of tomorrow in like 2 or 3 years. Almost all the people you mentioned, right?
Yeah, it takes. I think we have another year to go before we're kind of notable. Maybe two.
Right, that's what I said. But all the people you mentioned, Godless Cranium and Shannon, and
they've got like almost. I mean, he's got like 23,000, 30,000 subs. Thomas Westbrook has like, I don't know, 50. Rationality Rules has 120 or something. Godless, right. And they're all well deserved. Don't get me wrong. They're every one of them. I'm not a hater, right? I firmly believe all. High tide raises all ships, right? All boats. So, right. If they get more subs, I get more subs. And if I get more subs, they get more subs because it's a small little community. So I don't get this little envious thing. Oh, well, they've got 10,000 more subs than us. No. I'm happy for them because I know eventually I'm going to get some of those subs. If you put out good content, our biggest thing is the word of mouth. But like just today, somebody I've known for years wrote, how come I've never watched Non Sequitur's show? This show's great. I don't know. Why haven't you? Right? Who knows? But it's just word of mouth. That's all.
Who's Thomas Westbrook? I don't actually know who that is. That's the one.
Holy Kool-Aid.
I don't know. Oh, Tom. Oh, okay. I do know Thomas. Okay. Yes, I know Holy Kool-Aid. I debated. That was my second debate, or the second debate on your show.
Yeah. Actually, it was. That was on Objective Morality. Did he talk to you about? No, he was talking to Greg Geiler on Objective Morality.
Yeah, no, our debate was on is religion a positive?
Oh, yeah, is religion like a positive force in the world?
Yeah, something like that.
What else do you want to know? I mean, I kind of skipped probably a lot of parts, but I mean, I do want people to know that people do have spiritual experiences. They need to kind of. Chalk it up to what they want to.
This is actually fun. We've been.
Is he breaking up or is it just me?
137. Okay, so a little. Should I switch to my phone?
Oh, you're good. You're good. Fine.
Let me see. Switch to my phone. Can you hear me well enough?
Yep. Yeah, they say you're breaking up a little
bit.
Okay. And I want to thank the four people watching, Cy, Chaosism, Mike, and SJ. So thank you guys. I mean, the big turnout. But you know what? 4,000, it's all the same. I'm happy just to have people invite me on and have these conversations.
Yeah, this was fun. People, there are people who watch this. The chats get views after the fact.
Well, you see a lot of people going, oh, well, you know what? Steve's just an atheist. If an atheist watches this, they'll be like, oh, Steve's an atheist. You get a theist watching and they're like, oh, that probably makes more sense, which is weird, right? Because I'm clearly on the skeptic side. I'm clearly more, going to be favoring a rational approach to things because I'm not a theist, right? But that doesn't mean I think that theists have absolutely bad arguments. I just think they're unconvincing. But you get these atheists out there that don't understand what it means to actually be philosophically an atheist, and they'll say, well, Steve's just a fence sitter. And then they'll be like, well, I just lack a belief. We're in the same position. They don't realize that a lack of belief atheist and an agnostic is logically, syntactically, the exact same thing. There is no difference logically. It's just epistemically there's difference. So they're just as much of a fence sitter as an agnostic. And it blows me away when I hear somebody who just says, well, I lack a belief, but you know what? Steve, you're an agnostic, so you don't even take a position. I'm like, well, neither do you. You're not taking a position when you say, I don't believe you. You're not taking a position when you say, I just lack a belief. That is not a position on the proposition. Okay? I do not believe is a non-position. Sorry. And I admit that agnosticism is not a proposition on P either. The difference is, though, it is I think it's more of a second-order belief because I believe that I cannot properly evaluate the proposition. So it's still a belief. Agnosticism is a belief. Stop telling, not you, but out there, stop saying that agnosticism deals with knowledge. It is just a very grossly incorrect way of thinking of agnosticism. There's some truth to it, but it's just not the way people think it is, right? It's one of the things you've got to at least learn about the topic to understand the nuances. But it is a belief position.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, Steve, I'll give you some. Is there any other spiritual experience you want to point us to, other than the first one that you mentioned?
I've had not spiritual experiences, but like I used to play with a Ouija board a lot. by myself and other people, and it would move. And maybe it was the Idiomotive effect. I don't know, but it's really weird because I noticed, like with a Ouija board, it'll move like a figure eight, like a horizontal figure eight, and it would just go really, really fast. And I would swear that I wasn't doing that. Maybe I was. I'm looking back. I don't know. But other people have had the exact same pattern. And I think that's weird. That what is it about that pattern of a figure eight going like a horizontal figure eight? Why is it other people have exact? I've read that other people have the exact same pattern. That to me is still something I can't.
The devil's probably trying to tell you something. The devil's probably trying to tell you to kill eight kids that day or something. I don't know. So what happened? Tell me about the Ouija board. You were playing with your friends, or you're playing by yourself?
I used to do both. I used to play the Ouija board for years.
Did you really? Why? Just because it was interesting to you?
Yeah, I find it to be fascinating because I don't think that it – I don't think there's any real spiritual component to it, right? I don't think there's any things around. However, I will tell you this one story, and I don't think I've ever – I don't know if I told this on air or not, not to any detail. But I had a friend who basically got in touch with me not too long ago, even though we were friends since high school. But one day we were using a Ouija board in kind of like a community rec center that was in the middle of a complex that I lived in. So you'd have like these condos, and in the middle of the condo was a pool area. In the pool area, there was this little building there that had a little rec center, like a little pool table, right? Some weight sets and some other stuff. Not very big.
Right.
But we were playing the Ouija board in there one day, and this was with my other friend, who actually, ironically, is the one that coming down this Sunday, my Mormon friend. Just coincidence that the story is related. But when we play with the board, she was like, I don't feel well right now. And her eyes were like dilated. She was sweating, and she felt like something was, you know, not possessing her, but she felt something was there. Right. We said, okay. Actually my friend wasn't there yet. My Mormon friend wasn't there yet, but I called him, and I said, this is before I became Mormon. This was an experience that I had. Honestly, I don't remember. It was like I was 17, so it was either immediately after I got baptized or before. I don't remember, okay? So bear with me.
Right.
But I had been friends with him since sixth grade. So, but I you know, like, okay, he's a spiritual person. Maybe he can figure out what's going on. So I called him up, and I said, dude, you got to come over here. And he came over, and he's like sat down and kind of looked uneasy, but he's like, okay, what's the story? And he's like, well, do you mind if we pray? I was like, knock yourself out. Well, he started to pray, but every other word out of his mouth was like garbled. It sounded like, you know how people get robotic on Hangouts kind of stuff? It was like something was choking him. And he just got done, and he's like, we need to get out of here. And he said, you know, something prevented him from praying. Now, to this day, we've never really spoken about it. When it comes down Sunday, I kind of do want to have a talk with him about it, because my friend that had happened to, because she recently kind of brought this up, just not long ago with me, I asked her, I said, do you actually still that day think that something was around you? Because she's not a believer, right? And she said, yes. And it's kind of surprised me, even to this day, 40 years later, whatever it was, well, 30 years later, she still thinks that there was something there, and she's not a religious person. And my best friend, Morris, that's his name, he's Mormon, who is a spiritual person, even he noticed something. Right, so I've had experiences like that when it comes to weird supernatural experiences I can't explain. But the problem is that doesn't get you to a deity. It doesn't follow. Right?
Of course, I mean, you're not those. If you thought those experiences, but those experiences, you don't put them out of the realm of, like, most atheists would hear something like that, and I can't imagine what they're going to think, but they'll find some naturalistic explanation for it immediately, correct? Which may not be right.
Yes, that's true. But it depends on what they're looking for. Like if you're dealing with science, then you have to look for a natural explanation, because you have to hear to scientific methodological naturalism, right? So science always tries to find a natural explanation to an observer phenomenon. But if you want to get out of the scientific realm and get into the philosophy and existential stuff, because what exists, you know, is existential, that's philosophy, then what is it that exists that's causing that, if it's not something that is in the natural realm?
Right, or the metaphysical realm. Is it possible that they were having legitimate experiences of evil presences that were supernatural in origin? Do you think that's at least possible, Steve?
Yes.
And do you think it's likely, or do you explain it a different
way? I'm going to just go 50-50 at this point. I have no way of determining one way or another. I don't know.
Okay, well, at least you're honest. See, a lot of people would discount it one way or the other because it doesn't conform with their already
preconceived notions. I'm not an ontological naturalist, though. I'm not an ontological naturalist. I'm a methodological naturalist.
So naturalism just in terms of using to explain something scientifically, but you allow for the possibility that there is a supernatural realm to life? Is that how I'm understanding it correctly?
Yeah, the only thing is that when people say like supernatural, I don't know what that means anymore. I don't know if there's a firm definition of what it means. If you want to use that as something that is not explainable by known natural things, that may be what it is, right? There might be something that we just don't know about. And some people have argued, and I think they may argue correctly, that supernatural just means natural we don't know about yet. Because I don't know what the line of demarcation would be between natural and supernatural.
But, I'm just saying that you allow for the possibility that that is some form of the spirit realm.
Oh, certainly. Sure, why not?
Okay.
Yeah, I don't discount that offhand. I have experiences, but I don't.
Right. But that's what I'm saying. Some automatically offhand and say it can't possibly be the actual spirit realm. There's got to be some completely natural explanation for that. Now, I had a lot of experiences like that prior to me becoming a Christian. Not necessarily, you know, with demons attacking my friends, but, you know, experiences like that could not necessarily be explained other than naturally. And they were part of me, you know, pushing me towards becoming a Christian. Because I was like,
well, why Christian? What is it about Christianity that you said of all the religions out there, what particularly was it that said, this is the one I'm going with? Because there's tens of thousands of denominations of Christianity.
Right.
How do you know which one to pick, right?
Right. I thought I told you this story though when I went to church.
You kind of did. You kind of did touch on it before. Yes.
Well, I just felt that night very strongly, like the Holy Spirit. It's not that dissimilar from what happened to you when you became a Mormon, only a lot more intense.
Well, let me ask you this thing. Okay, so you believe that you did feel the Holy Ghost, right?
Yes.
Okay. It's funny because I have related that story before, not so much on air, a couple times, but I've talked about it over the last 20 some odd years. It was 30 years ago, I guess. Wow, it's been a long time. And I've actually not mentioned the details about being Mormon, right? Just, you know, this feeling, and I've described the feeling, and people will be like, oh, yeah, that's the Holy Ghost. And then I'll say that it was a Mormon blessing. Oh, it couldn't have been the Holy Ghost. And I'm like, do you not see the problem here? Because
I understand both the problem that I understand both how you see it as a problem, and I understand why they say it too. So there's I don't know how to explain this in any sort of coherent way, but if you're trained to think that the Mormon is a cult, then you're going to think automatically that can't have been a legitimate experience of the Holy Spirit. You know, there are people who will trip out about like Catholics the same way, automatically.
Mm-hmm. No, Catholics. My friend, you know, Jay would have never thought that. But she was a lot more liberal Catholic, you know.
Right. It depends on how you – it depends on a lot of factors. Because if you have it drilled into you, if you, it depends on how you've experienced your Christianity also being grown up.
Sure.
Like if you had a hardcore version of Christianity and they told you 50 times a day – you know, don't ever become a Mormon or watch out for Mormons. Be careful, Mormon tells you they have a spirit, and they say, well, it was like, it couldn't have been the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, I got to tell you,
I
totally agree with you. I got to tell you, though, I didn't have a single bad experience with the Mormon church. I have nothing negative to say about any of the people. The doctrine is, you know what, is it really any more different than any other religion? Not really. I mean, except for Scientology, that's not really a religion. But, you know, it's one of those things, if you're going to believe that a man walked on water and raised from the dead, then is it really hard then to believe that God has a body of flesh and bones that came from the planet? It's not that much of a leap of faith. But that's irrelevant to the point is that I really liked the people. And I had good experiences with the church, nothing relating to cultism or anything like that. And people were like, oh, well, you're just Stockholm or something. I'm like, no. Since I was 6 years old. They were like, you know, my friend and his brother and his mom and their dad, just great people, man. And it really kills me when people just throw out that word cult. And I don't think they'd mean to do it pejoratively per se. I mean, they have their own definitions of cult that I don't use. Because right. I think their definition is so vague, it can include anything. Because I even asked one person that thinks Mormon is a cult, and he knows a lot about Mormonism, really, really does. He's called Naked Mormon. Was that his name? Was that his name? I don't remember, but there's a really, really knowledgeable guy on Mormonism. And I asked him, I said, according to your definition, the Boy Scouts are a cult. He's like, yeah. I'm like, then does it really tell you anything then that they're so ubiquitous that can be used for any type of organization? No, to me, a cult is, you know, Jonestown, Heaven's Gate, those kind of things, right? I hate to even use it with Jehovah's Witness, although I've seen cult-like activity with Jehovah's Witness, and I definitely think that Scientology is a cult.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, where you draw the line, it gets hard to say. It gets really, really hard to say. But I understand why people have a problem with some of the doctrine that is extra to Christianity. But as most Mormons probably experience Mormonism, it's kind of a variation of Reformed Christianity, not that different from they don't live their life on a practical level that much different than an Episcopalian or something like that, because they're not really taking the parts about it that are weird or out there. They're not really internalizing that and living those on a daily basis. That's where it could potentially become more cult-like. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. And also kind of show that certain denominations are more incorporating. For example, like, you know, the Catholics would say that, you know, well, the Catholics I knew would say the Mormons are Christians. A lot of Christians, you know, exclude certain groups, right? I mean, the fundamentalists, the evangelicals, they're very exclusionary of who they say are Christians, right? It's the no true Christian fallacy. And to me, anybody who accepts that Jesus was who he said he was, he rose from the dead and all that stuff, that's a Christian. Now, granted, I may not agree with some of the things they say, but you're not. I really hate when people take people's labels away. If I say, look, I believe this, this is who my position, and you're like, oh, well, no, it's not.
Well, some of that backfighting between sex gets crazy. I mean, I'll listen to Christians, and then they'll start talking about Catholicism, and they'll start going like, you know, the Antichrist is Catholic, and you know, this is why Catholicism is heresy, and they'll start going off on it. And I'm like, you know, that's completely unnecessary. On layman's terms, for someone who's a practicing Catholic, the things that they believe, you know, they might have some false beliefs baked into the cake, but it's not my responsibility to take it out of them. It's irrelevant. You know, how they live their life in before God is what's important.
Yeah, and I think that God would be the one that, look at it, if God does exist, then I rather let him judge than half the idiotic fundamentalists that I run into daily. Because if that's the person out there that's trying to convince me that God exists, God's not doing a very good job, because I'm not going to buy into what they have to sell. You know, when I was listening to, like, my friend Jade, now I'm not a fan of the Catholic Church for obvious reasons, but I mean, I loved her to death and I respected her position. But I would sit and listen to her for hours, off air, on air, it didn't matter, because we would have conversations, never got embittered, never got embroiled. The only disagreement we ever had was over Trump, and I'm not a fan of Trump. But I wouldn't even know over Trump, because, I mean, we both realize he's shit, but more of a Reagan more than anything else than Trump. She was not a fan of Reagan. I happen to like Reagan. But I would still listen to her, right? Even though she was Catholic and I would never become Catholic, I still was engaging with conversation with her. And if you can't get engaged in conversation, you're never going to try to sway anybody. So if God wants somebody to convert somebody, having a conversation with them is the only way that's going to happen. And because if you find some asshole out there and some evangelist that's just going to like tell you you're wrong, you're going to hell, the backfire effect kicks in, you get this entrenchment, and you're not going in to move your position.
Well, you're not going to listen to them at all. It starts with a real conversation. It's like, for example, one of the things that I thought was probably instrumental in my becoming a Christian is when I was in Italy, I was traveling with my cousin Janine, who was a devout Roman Catholic. Now, my mom's words on her, because she would always be suspicious of her because she's a devout Roman Catholic. So one night we're drinking in Italy, and we start having these conversations about religion. Now, I did the same thing that an atheist would do. I started with, you guys hate gays. And, I started all the objections. But once we got past that, we just started having a real conversation about what her faith meant to her. It's like, wow, there's something about this. Like, I got where someone from, and I was like, there's something real about this. You know, once you got past the societal arguments, does that make sense? The arguments that are baked into the cake, sort of.
Yeah, there's certain arguments that, of course, that are just not going to go away, unfortunately. And I wish they would. And some of the ones I definitely wish would go away is all that stuff dealing with, like, whole gay people. When you have a bitter theist out there, like Stephen Anderson, talking about, killing all the gays and stuff like that. That's just pure rhetoric that needs to just die out. That needs to be censored by everybody. That needs to be rebuked. That needs to be, chastised and them called out for it. There's certain types of dialogue that is just not appropriate in 2018.
Right.
And that's it. That's one of them. I mean, you can say, look, I don't believe, I'm not gay. I don't believe in gay marriage. That's fine. That's your position, right? But when you advocate violence, right, you're done in my book. There is no discussion on that.
Right. Well, that's right. That's not a rational, reasonable point of view. All I'm saying is that when I started talking to my cousin, I took the point of view of the secular world. I was an atheist. I was like, she's telling me she's a devout Roman Catholic and it means so much to her. And I start off with, well, the church is so anti-gay. Defend the church position. And she, she didn't do it all that admirably, but I can tell that she herself was not necessarily anti-gay. That was really the important part. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. But I do got to cut this about short here.
I was going to
show. By the way, the show is going to be early tonight. We're going to be doing it at 3, not 5 Pacific time. So we're starting in about an hour.
All right. So I'll say my little piece and then I'll let you say goodbye. So this went really well, Steve. We got a little bit into your spiritual experiences, but also, I wanted to just get a much better sense of who you are and what you do and why you do what you do, which I thought really came through loud and clear. So, like I say to so far every atheist or every agnostic, now there's two categories I've had on my show, it's always gone really well. So the door is always open. Mi casa es su casa. You are welcome back anytime if you want to talk about anything. And you go ahead and say your piece and say goodbye. I thought this went really well.
Well, I do appreciate it. I'm always thrilled and honored and humbled even to be asked to do these types of things. Doesn't matter the size of the channel. Doesn't matter if what the beliefs are, if you can have honest dialogue. And you clearly know how to do that. So props to you on that. To the theists that are listening that ever watched this weird video, I hope they take something to heart by what I said. How to advance the argument, if that's what their goal is. I suspect that the people leaving the comments, probably will be supportive for any atheist out there that, runs this narrative. Well, Steve's just an atheist. I recommend just go watching my videos and learning about the topic a little bit, understanding epistemologically what agnosticism really is about. Don't call an agnostic an atheist. It's just wrong. It's not. If you want to promote the truth, right, it doesn't matter whether you're an atheist or theist. I think both positions want to think that they're promoting truth. But when you're promoting something that clearly is not the truth, and it's because of ideological positions, and we both know this happens. We know a lot of theists even do this, not in your guys' group, but in the young earth creationist or the flat earth group. I think they're just demonstrable liars. Don't be like that. If you want to know more about it, message me. If you want to know more about my musicians, you want to know more about the show that we do, please, by all means, message me. I'm happy to try to talk to anybody, just not while I'm doing the show, because that's difficult. I get messages like exactly like 1 minute before we go on air. I'm like, I don't really have time for this, you know. But anyways, thank you for having me on. Again, I do really appreciate it, and I'm happy to join you anytime. You got a panel or anything time you want. Somebody just to kind of, you know, run.
Yeah, it, man.
Run
come on. Yeah. School's about whatever. School's on science or philosophy. And this was thanks, awesome, buddy. Steve. Thank you for coming on.
And thank you, live chat, Shane, Stickman, Casimir, how to go, Sygard, all you guys. Thanks for watching this.
Peace, people.
Peace.
And let me cut this, and we.